the NFL podcast. Not buying what Matt Schaub is selling.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I come to you from a virtual room filled with some heroes. Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal, and Patrick Claibon. Oh, let's legally tamper, boys.
I know the first day of, you know, free agency deals happening. You know, we got a big retirement. We got a guest. Dan is moving. And yet, you know, the first thing you hear on the show is Matt Schaub.
Well, that of course, by the way, was our wonderful friend Chris Wessling wrote the definitive hit piece on Matt Schaub on NFL.com some years back, and was always quite agitated by him, and I agree. He was an agitating quarterback.
And that's why Money hit him with the ultimate stray, just randomly out of nowhere. Matt Schaub somewhere mounting his own business and just catches this giant, massive bullet, like Mario Kart-sized bullet. Just
drive his car comedically. Off the
road. Yes, this is essentially the opening of a new league year. It officially hits on Wednesday, but as I alluded to, this is the legal tampering period portion of free agency, which means you can connect with players and enter into agreements, and we're getting a lot of them flying fast and furious. It's just after 1 p.m. here on the West Coast, and we got a lot of news to get to and a lot of signings, and I'm sure, boys, that more will come while we do this episode. And this is all set against the backdrop of the retirement of one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, Drew Brees. So we have Jeff Duncan, one of the most respected columnists in the game, covering the Saints. He's with The Athletic, and he's going to join us and talk about life after Brees and talk about a little bit about Drew Brees' legacy. So that's coming up later. But yes, let's get going. Let's dig in. And Ricky, why don't you jump in for this too? Because I know this is if you didn't know that I was moving, now you know.
Wow.
Dan's the man behind
movers.
A literal box. Yeah.
Literally today. Today is your official moving day.
I've been up
congrats.
Since 4 a.m.
Where are you? What room are you in?
This is like a garage that's been converted into like a guest house.
Because there's like a kitchen behind you.
Right. It's very, very attractive.
It was, I have a lot of plans for this space. You guys, when you come and visit, you'll see. I think where I'm sitting right now, I'm going to turn into a full bar. Going to get wild. And there's going to be a guest bedroom behind it. So I'm very excited about the move. I was in Culver City for 7 years exactly, March 15th, 2014, to today. It is interesting, though, just the way things work out. It falls on the beginning of a new league year. So this is
The Ides of March, which historically are – it's an interesting time to make a major life move.
Well, I have a question for you guys. Yes. Like, Mark is always, like, you know, saying that he could never – you know, any of you guys could ever afford a home, and you bought. So does that, like, throw you off the common man rankings? Because Sessler is always saying, we'll never be able to buy a house. And now you and Claibon are homeowners. Like, is this pushing you up a level?
It's a fair question. I don't think owning a home makes you not a common man. I feel very fortunate. Just Patrick, I'm sure you do as well. And maybe you could jump in at any time here, Claibon. But I'm very happy. My wife and I have worked very hard to achieve this. And also, I will say, the pandemic has been horrible, but it did save us a lot of money, and whether it was travel and childcare expenses, and that really is what got us over the hump. So, we're very fortunate. Claibon?
Yeah, from my point of view, we don't own the house. Like, we send the bank an exorbitant amount of money to let us continue to live here in this, like, pie-in-the-sky idea that 30 years, if I still exist, then eventually I will own the house. So it's I think we can still be common men as we are beholden, right, to a landlord.
That's true. I mean, the bank owns the house. Let's be completely honest about how all this works.
And I'd also note that some of the reasoning that the Sessler family does not own a house could track back to some financial decisions that were questionable. So,
and speaking of the Sesslers, I have two little monsters, Jack and Harrison, going to drop them over at Sessler Compound after today's show, so my wife and I can do some work in and around the house, and closed the back door at the old place. So thank you, Mark, for that.
No, we can't. We can't. We've got a massive agenda prepared for their entertainment.
All right, let's get to it. The reason I have Ricky, I asked Ricky to jump in, besides asking a strangely personal question on the show. The Patriots, the big stars so far. And by the way, I'm barely plugged in right now, as you can imagine. I was scrambling, doing my homework, and before we started on, and I see the Patriots are going nuts. So what do they do? Let's start at tight end. This has been a major problem for the Patriots. Feel free, Ricky, to throw in a little Throne of Ease jam if you'd like here as well. The Patriots have not had any production at tight end since Gronk left. They signed Jonnu Smith, formerly of the Titans, to a four-year $50 million contract. It includes $31.25 million guaranteed. This is a 25-year-old tight end who was a little bit under the radar in Tennessee, but everybody seems to love him, and now he's getting paid like a star at tight end. We got the two Patriots fans here. What do you guys think about this move?
Well, this was the guy on our show we did on NFL Network Friday. We had a segment, Guy I Would Happily Overpay For. And my first option actually was Trent Williams, but Mark got to him before me. So I went to Jonnu Smith, and maybe Belichick's watching NFL Network, getting some tips. Because this is a guy who's never gone over 500 yards in four NFL seasons, but just physically is a marvel to behold. Fun to watch, can block, is very much like a poor man's younger Gronk, I think, with a little extra speed and after the catch ability. But he's also kind of the guy, and I would throw Matthew Judon, I know we'll get to the other signings, the kind of guy the Patriots normally don't sign early in free agency, which is a really good starter who's going to get paid a little bit of a premium, not a Pro Bowler. It's like when we watched the Ravens-Titans game, you know, heading in the playoffs, we weren't like previewing it saying like, how are the Ravens going to stop Jonnu Smith? And how are the Titans going to slow down Judon? No, they're like really good players. And more importantly for the Patriots, they're at positions where the Patriots are literally the worst team in the NFL. They are the worst at pass catching. And I would say they are the very worst at having a pass rusher. So they paid a premium because they have all this cap space and they got like solid starters. That's my take.
I'm super excited, and I think he did have more of a breakout year last year, like you said, for the last four. Like, looking at last season alone, he really did sort of step up, so I'm excited for that. We just need to get someone that can actually throw the ball to him, so this is what I'm waiting for. You know what I mean? It's like, Cam's not going to do it.
All right, well, you're still holding on to that.
I think he will. I mean, I love that Belichick basically called Jonnu Smith the best in the league, tight end in the league in yards after the catch and the way he maneuvers once he gets the ball in his hands. And so, you know, sometimes Belichick waxes poetic and then destroys that player on Sunday. But he really does value him, and they absolutely needed the position upgrade. And tight ends take some time to develop, and there were a lot of mouths to feed in Tennessee. So I think he, for a team that's still going to be pretty run heavy, he's a really good fit.
People wonder about the production, right? But like A.J. Brown didn't have like wild production. There's only so much, you know, in terms of catching the football that people could do. But I mean, you mentioned it, Mark, when Jonnu Smith gets the ball in his hands and he's healthy, it's like, wow, like who is this guy? And I see why Bill Belichick wanted that. And, you know, to Erica's point about Cam, like this is something that they're, whoops, as I blip away here, this is something that I think they're able to do because they know what their plan is, right? Early in free agency, it's like, all right, well, so we have Cam. He's in place. This is what we're doing. And they are able to get out there and make an aggressive offer like an hour, 30 minutes after the window opens to Jonnu Smith's folks and the Rosenhaus camp. And they're like, oh, okay. Well, yeah, this is good. I think perhaps a lot of the times, especially this week, we're going to look at the total contract, which is even more pie in the sky, I think, this offseason than it normally is in terms of like 5 years, $800 billion. I think the structure is going to matter this year more than anything else. But I think it's a nice aggressive offer to a player that is really, really fun to watch. And I'm excited for Patriots fans because I think they're going to feel differently about their quarterback when he has somebody to throw the football to.
No.
And I don't know.
You can't convince me that he's not going to be like a Taysom, you know, Hill type. I do not. I think that we're going to get it.
We should back up and say that since we've last taped, Cam Newton signed a contract for 1 year, $3.5 million guaranteed, five or six base, and it can go up to 14 with incentives.
Like
and
a so, Super Bowl or Pro Bowl, please.
Right, Super Bowl, Pro Bowl, like all that stuff, making the playoffs. That is, if you look at last year's salaries, it's between A.J. McCarron and Case Keenum. So I do think that's instructive. Like, they wanted to lock in Cam as either a potential starter or a backup or a guy that's going to be competing. Certainly a guy that's going to be competing, I think, early, because they liked him at that price better than the Daltons or Winstons or Fitzpatrick's. That was their choice. I do think
Garoppolo?
He can be I don't think this gets him out of the In a world where Garoppolo becomes available because the 49ers sign Watson or trade for Watson, which is, I think, the only way Garoppolo is available, I think the Patriots could very much still be in a veteran quarterback market. I mean, they're paying Cam, like I said, backup money. But I think they have hopes, and I do too, that he can be an average starting quarterback, and that for that price, like, that's a good bargain compared to like what Wentz is making or other guys.
Well, I think they're going to draft someone too. I mean, they have been doing, according to reports, a ton of work on the rookies, not just the typical stuff that every team does. And I just think there's a part B to this, that Cam Newton is a bridge. And, you know, I do enjoy watching Erica slow dance with that child that made fun of Cam Newton, the two of them verbally against everything that Cam Newton stands for and does. But I don't think you're going to have to watch 16 starts of him next year.
No, I just don't need him posting on Instagram like, you know why I work out to gospel music? Because, like, I love the grind. And it's like, come on, man. Throw a ball. Throw the ball.
Anti-Instagram right. takes, just seething from so, Erica Tamposi. Just don't get on the gram.
And just it's like, back, you don't even need to listen to WEI. Just tune into our podcast. it's like Zolak is here, is right here with us.
Just a little cold water of the Jonnu Smith signing. You know, this is one of those classic first day of free agency signings where we're now talking about Jonnu Smith like he's Travis Kelce meets George Kittle. All right, we'll see. We'll see if he's as good as everyone says, but there is, I think, an important thing, and this is more a broad feeling, and you see it every year, is that a lot of these signings aren't going to work out. A lot of these big, splashy signings, and you look at it on paper, and you say, oh, this guy's perfect for this offense, he's this, he's that. Well, it's like, if he was that good, why is he not with his team anymore? Jonnu Smith hit free agency, the Titans let him go. I'm not saying it doesn't mean he doesn't have value, but... Okay, there was just a lot of flowery talk just now about Jonnu Smith, like he's the greatest.
Well, we
player
said it last
lived.
Week. We said it last week, and we talked about it 2 weeks ago. I ranked him as my number one tight end before knowing where he would land ahead of Hunter Henry. I do think he like expands a playbook, and that's a unique trait.
Well, for them, of course, they had like 8 plays last year,
right? So. But I just mean like he can block. He is such a red zone threat, and he fits well with a good run attack. And I do think he could be better in his second contract. But of course, Dan, they're playing a premium. I do think, you know, unlike the Titans, for instance, so the Patriots looked at this year and intentionally decided this was the year they were going to have a ton of cap space when other teams don't.
Greg's
and
so
now,
excited,
and now they're going to spend it. Oh, I'm not excited.
He's like, we're back, baby.
I don't think like
I got like 100 more news items. They're still talking about the Patriots. There's so much excitement in the air right now.
But they are the story today because it's not just those two guys. Matthew Judon. These are two year deals. He gets $32 million over 2 years. Jonnu Smith gets very similar. They're all basically just 2 year deals. Judon is a really good try hard, can do a little bit of everything pass rusher. Very like much closer to Rob Ninkovich. Than Chandler Jones, for instance, when I think of like how he'll fit in New England. And a really good player. But again, you're like paying a premium. And it's because they don't have players. Like they have some of the worst position groups in the entire NFL in the front seven in their pass catchers. And they know it. And that's why they gave Jalen Mills a 2 year contract from the Eagles. They gave Devon Godchow, who I liked a lot, coming into free agency, a 2 year, guaranteed money. But these are all just like solid, okay players. They're not like going to change your team, but they need those guys because they were among the league's worst at a few of these positions.
Are you doing something new, Greg, here? Now you're not even, you're just saying the guaranteed years. You're no longer even talking about what the actual initial figures are. You're taking it to the next level. You're working on
basically
a higher plane.
They're basically, yeah, the Godchow and Mills, and some of those deals are 4 year deals, but they're essentially 2 year guarantees. Yeah,
we should have been doing that the whole time, right?
Now right, you're gonna have to do that forever. Now, now that you started, Greg. Now you have to
one of the bigger questions coming out of this entire Patriots frenzy is Mitch Gold at Tremessai asked if Jalen Mills will keep his green hair. He's had green hair for years on the Eagles. Do you suddenly make a fashion decision? Or do the Patriots maybe change their uniforms to incorporate some green?
You're not allowed to color your hair in New England. Are you kidding me? You're not allowed to have fun.
Well, that's fair.
Oh, is it one of those like Yankees facial hair things that got banged against our heads for 15 years? It was just like a storyline that for some reason existed.
Didn't Ocho had some crazy hair with the Patriots, didn't I?
Cam Newton.
He was there for like 3 months, but yeah.
Jonnu Smith, Matthew Judon, Jalen Mills. Okay. I'm not scared. It's good. They're trying again, it looks like. But if you're going to act like, oh, the Patriots are winning free agency, okay.
But who's acting like that? I don't think anyone – you're right. On the first day of free agency, you're right, those teams get, like, outsized attention. But I don't feel like anyone is looking at them adding, like, a handful of, like, solid starters and thinking their team is totally changed.
No, but it's the same – they're being dressed up the same way that every year one team gets dressed up this way. And it's like they've won the week. It's like three of these players won't be on the roster 2 years from now.
They are getting back eight defensive starters that opted out last year. I think
that's fair.
Probably something
getting Hightower back is as big of a move for them as any of these. And then you get Chung back and they traded Cannon.
No, Greg's not excited. You're all in. You're ready, baby.
I'm sort of the opposite. Like I think of like 3 years ago when you had a running gag during their last Super Bowl season that I'm not even really a Patriots fan.
Which
like hit home, unfortunately, that I don't feel anything anymore. But right. I do think it's logical what they did.
Let's move on. Enough of that. A lot of Patriots talk. It was good. They're doing well. They're not the only team doing business, though. Shaq Barrett of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the defending champions. They are staying in business together. 4 years, $72 million. Base value, $17 million. Can get up to $18 million with incentives. $36 million guaranteed, according to Adam Schefter. This is a nice move here, Mr. Claibon, for the Bucs. And maybe it doesn't happen if Mr. Tom Brady, the former Patriot, doesn't restructure his deal to free up some more money. Brady's very manageable salary for being a super-duper star quarterback is helping the Bucs in their title defense here.
Yeah, he's going to get $60 million over the first couple of years, so we can probably cool it right on egalitarian, just a redistributive
Tom
Brady.
Man. It's pretty good.
He took like $20 million more guaranteed. He's not doing anything out of the goodness of his heart. He just got all this cash and got guaranteed money into 2022.
Listen, Greg, I know you kicked him out the door and you're still
dealing
with
that. This is the same argument we made in New England. He never took like less. He took a little less money. I will give that. But this particular contract, I think he's getting a ton more guaranteed money.
Just triggered. A philanthropist, Mr. Brady, doing all he can to lift all boats. I think, honestly, like I'm looking at $17 million and seeing what Shaq Barrett did in the Super Bowl and through the playoff run. And I think he gave them a hometown discount. Like I came here and people, saw me out of the shadow of Von Miller. I lead the league in sacks. I win the Super Bowl the next year. I think he could make an argument for much more money. So in terms of the way that the Bucs structured this, it's good for them. I do think, the Carl Lawsons of the world, all the other edge guys out there, wouldn't have minded Shaq Barrett to take a little more money, but this is the nature of the thing. People like to win. People like to be comfortable.
He's the ninth highest paid edge, as of an hour or so ago. So you're right. I think you're right because you wouldn't have been surprised if he became the highest paid. And that didn't happen. And I thought they got Levante David back at a relatively affordable deal. You franchise Chris Godwin. I mean, this Bucs team didn't even win the division last year, and I don't think we've even seen how good they can be. And there is a unified push to bring everyone back. And Dan, to your point, if someone other than Tom Brady is the quarterback, A, nothing that happened last year would have happened, and B, half these guys would have signed elsewhere for more money.
In other news, Aaron Jones is staying put. We talked about this last week. He wasn't franchised. The two sides, though, kept working at it. And they come to terms on a four-year, $48 million contract. So Aaron Jones, coming off back-to-back big-time years, stays locked and loaded in the Green Bay backfield. Mark, this one makes a lot of sense to me. I thought it would have been a real head-scratcher to let him go when you're basically locked and loaded for another big run at the title. And I I don't care how what you think of Dylan, the second-year player. You have a star in the backfield. Good job keeping him.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there is another way to look at it. Like, maybe they could have franchise-tagged him for $8 million and seen what happened. But I don't dislike the deal. I think that there – I know as people are hostile towards the idea of paying running backs, but I think there's a cluster of guys that deserve money. And I would put Aaron Jones in that category just because you're right with A.J. Dillon. I think he played well down the stretch and they do like him, but you know what you have in Aaron Jones. Do you go and disrupt the backfield at this stage of Aaron Rodgers' career and the kind of season he just came off of? I don't. I think he plays a much bigger role this year too in the passing game because Jamal Williams, he's going into free agency. He won't be part of that attack. So they kept, I think, one of their best players, and along with Davante Adams and Rodgers, you've got a triplets as good as anything around in the NFC.
They hooked him up, and they could have tagged him, and he ultimately got more guaranteed money on what's basically a 1 year deal. If like his guaranteed money is really in that first year, and he's getting significantly more than the tag. It's actually a rare example of a team hooking a player up when they actually could have put him in a worse spot by just giving him that franchise tag. And they're betting that he's going to be part of their team for a while and that they're actually going to get to year two and three. And that makes sense because Aaron Jones is awesome. And I think the A.J. Dillon pick can still make sense because he's going to have the same role, I think, whether Aaron Jones is there or not. I think he's going to be out there for 30-40% of the snaps, play a lot in the red zone. Like he looked pretty good, and they're not going to want to give Aaron Jones 300 touches. They are doing the thing the Bucks are, which is like, let's keep everyone together. You can do the Patriots route, which they used to do, which is let's shake it up. Every year is new. We don't even want to bring back everyone when we're the championship team, or you can bring back the key people. And the Packers are bringing back Preston Smith. They're bringing back Aaron Jones, just like the Bucks are bringing back their key guys, which if nothing else is like good for fans. Like football's fun. It's fun to root for the same players and the same good players that like you were rooting for last year.
Yeah, the Bills are another team doing that too.
You just get diminishing returns, right? Like if you're trying to constantly replace good players, it becomes something that's hard to do, right? I think Seahawks fans would have been fine sacrificing a few things to keep the Legion together for another season. I think a lot of these teams that had that group of years, that 3-4 years where the championship window was, I think teams, fans at least, probably wouldn't mind having guys stick around a little bit longer. And yeah, you're doing it potentially at the cost of the future, but the future might not work out. Like this whole thing, well, yeah, like the Steelers, for example, like, oh yeah, we just draft great wide receivers all the time, so we can just get rid of them. But like eventually, it's not always going to work out like that. It may feel like it does, but it's just hard to get guys who can succeed at a high level over and over again. It's better to just keep the ones that you have.
Right. Aaron Jones's agent, Drew Rosenhaus, told ESPN, "We anticipated bigger offers in free agency, but Aaron wanted to stay with the Packers." Well, it's all kumbaya between the running back and his team. And it, for some reason, Eddie Lacy just flashed in my mind. And Mark, when I think about the early days of whether it was around the league or when Greg came aboard or ATN, I can't remember which era it was, the off season of writing about Eddie Lacy and his conditioning efforts, and there's their Beachbody in there somewhere.
Yeah, he joined up as a Beachbody member, and I don't think that it didn't result in a career year by any stretch, but he did shake some of the narrative around his fitness.
Yeah, well, anyway. Let's remember a guy, Eddie Lacy.
One of the nicest guys of the running back position in the last few years. Eddie Lacy's a really nice guy. And tweet at him. He'll tweet back at you. Hit
really?
Him up, everybody. Yeah. Nice. Tweet it. Little Easyana42 on Twitter.com.
See how Claybon just gave us a little slice of humanity there, and I liked it. Eddie Lacy, good dude. Moving on, Joe Tooney. He has a new team. It is the Kansas City Chiefs, the defending conference champions. I was bummed about this one. I was hoping the Jets were going to get Tooney, who's a rock-solid guard. They wanted him last year. I imagine they were gunning for him this year, but the Chiefs are aggressive, and they gave him a 5-year, $80 million contract, close to $50 million in practical guarantees. Now, I don't know what practical guarantees are.
That's a new one.
So I don't know what that one is. But anyway, this is a much-needed splashy move here for the Chiefs, Greg, who gutted their offensive line, just cut both their tackles, and now you can plug in a guy that's, and you know very well as a Patriots fan, maybe not the greatest guard of all time, maybe not Quentin Nelson, but a guy you just plug him in and you don't have to worry about him.
No, a really good starting guard who never misses a snap, can play center too if you want, and like those guys get paid. I was starting to have a theory that all these guys, including Shaq Barrett and Judon, that they were all like just a little bit of a discount more. And I don't think Shaq Barrett's taking a hometown discount necessarily. I just think that's probably the market that was there for him, and the Bucks win any tie breaks. I think maybe all the players are not quite going to hit the same levels that they would in a different year where there's more cap space available, which just makes sense. And even that change is not a big difference. It's probably just a couple $1 million a year, 10% difference. But then I look at this Tooney deal. This doesn't seem like there's any discount to it. There was a strong market for him, 32 guaranteed over the first 2 years. And it basically is, 48 over three. Like, that's top guard money. That's what you expected him to get. There's no discount there. That's what he got. That means that your Jets most likely, and probably other multiple teams, were in on Tooney, and you had to go big to go get him.
I enjoy Greg, like with these two dueling theories that A, the money will be less because of the climate, but B, the cap doesn't actually matter. So it's two worlds of thought colliding and not always fitting together.
The cap matter. The cap this year there is less money to spend. That is absolutely true. When I say the cap doesn't matter, it's with this Taysom Hill. It's like the Taysom Hill contract and even in the Brady contract. Like, if you want to push money into the future, like give Taysom Hill a pretend $140 million contract or Preston Smith, like you can do it as much as you want, right? Like, you basically can do it as much as you possibly want if you've got an owner. Like, Benson's just, giving out those Benjamins.
Ben's son. Matt Milano staying put in Buffalo. The linebacker resigns, 4 years, $44 million. That includes $24 million guaranteed. It seemed like Milano was going to hit the open market, but instead Buffalo ponies up for a three-down linebacker who can make plays all over the field when he's on the field, but the Bills running it back with Matt Milano.
One of the better off-ball linebackers. I think that Levante David deal helped the Bills out because Levante David got top-of-the-market money when I don't think you would have expected him to at 31. And so it's like Milano, you just slide him right in there, right around the same money for a younger, probably more dynamic player at this point. David's obviously had a better career, but Milano's pretty awesome. They were very different with him on the field.
And a franchise that values continuity, right? And we see it in just how many Carolina Panthers find their way to upstate New York. And so they're able, they were, the idea was the price, perhaps the price would get a little bit too high. But in terms of what you're actually losing and what you gain in having Matt Milano back, I believe that they, were able to find that medium where it's like, oh, yeah, you don't have to change much. You get to do what you know that you can be successful at, and it makes sense for both sides, which is, what we're looking for in deals.
In other news, Kyle Juszczyk, the fullback, is staying in San Francisco. Rap Sheet reported a five-year deal worth $27 million. It is a done deal, all signed up. Juszczyk, by the way, this interesting, first of all, he's known by everyone apparently, and I was, I guess, a little behind the curve on this Juszczyk stuff, but he's Juice. Everybody calls him Juice. And I find it interesting that Juice is good again. It's the OJ thing, obviously. Juice disappeared, and it wasn't a nickname that anybody would affix themselves to. And what a nickname it was for OJ, by the way, because not only was Orenthal James Simpson, OJ, Juice, he juiced every offense he went. It's one of the great nicknames to see it get pulverized the way it did. But now it's back, somewhat ironically, with a fullback. this is more an aside, but it did get me thinking that
like
the Juice is back.
Yeah, especially through the PED scandals, right? I mean, Juice took a negative connotation.
That's true. It had a double hit. It had the baseball steroid scandal. It had OJ. You thought it was dead, but it's back with a fullback.
I also did not know this was his nickname until Greg
Juice
suggested that the Niners re-signed Juice in our communications channel, and I'm just like, wait, who did they sign? Who is this? And like, then I like an hour passed till I figured this out. But what
I didn't either. I totally am just copying like every 49ers beat writer who also just it was news.
It's his Twitter name. Like his Twitter name is actually Juice Check. Juice Check.
But and then it gets even better. This is why it was like really I couldn't stop thinking about it this morning. I woke up again. The movers didn't come till 7, but I woke up at 4 and I just couldn't go back to bed. So I was just like reading, and I stumbled on this Juszczyk story, and I went to his Instagram, and so incredibly thankful to be a part of this organization for 5 more years. Thank you, faithful, for the continuous support. Looking forward to showing that the juice is always worth the squeeze.
Yes. Mm.
So he's leaning into it. Juice is back, baby.
Plus, I learned something that my slamming of like their signing of Kyle Juszczyk like 4 years ago was so I guess overly aggressive that it actually became it became known to the general manager there, John Lynch, who kind of had it out for me because of that, and I really put him on this top 101. He was aware of how much I slammed the Kyle Juszczyk signing years ago, so I put him on the 101, which I became aware of through you know, one of our insiders. So I put him on the 101 list this year, just saying this is an apology for 4 years ago when I, you know, degraded your signing of Juszczyk, which turned out to be a bargain, really. He ended up being a great signing, and I was told it was passed along to him through back channels, you know, and he really appreciated that apology.
I can't tell if any of this is real or not. Builder.
This is real. This one is real. This one's real.
John Lynch, I mean, how thin can one skin be? You read a Greg Rosenthal piece slamming your signing, and you got your underpants all in a bunch?
I think they just defended it. He was right, by the way. And Juszczyk wouldn't have gotten this much money again if other teams weren't going for him. Like all these little Kyle Shanahan wannabes out there, they wanted them some Kyle Juszczyk too. They wanted the juice.
All right. They do read this stuff, because I can remember a time when Daniel Jeremiah came up to me and said, hey, I just want to let you know that like David Caldwell, the Jaguars GM, read something that you said slamming Jacksonville and basically came up to DJ and was like, who the F is this Mark Sessler clown? And it's like, that's how you build connections.
All right, let's push pause here because we have a very special guest to introduce. Yes, he is a columnist for The Athletic, one of the most respected guys in the game. And good for this man, because he just happens to have a book that he put out recently called Peyton and Breeze, the men who built the greatest offense in NFL history. Look at Jeff Duncan nailing the timeliness in a big spot for moving units of his book. Welcome for the first time, good sir, to the Around the NFL podcast.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, my timing was good on that one. I was really worried Drew was going to retire last year before the book even came out. That would not have been nearly as good a timing. So we were fortunate there. I might have even paid him a little under the table to hang on for another
year. I was
going
to say, did you convince him to come back for this final season? That would be very kind.
I did beg him, but I don't think my $100 handshake was going to sway him one way or the other.
All right. So, Jeff, and thank you again for joining us. We want to just kind of get an update, lay of the land, what's going on in New Orleans. It's the end of an era. But I want to start the conversation this way, and it comes from your Twitter account. Your favorite quote on Drew Brees comes from longtime performance coach Tom House. Drew is a superstar without superpowers. Drew will have a spectacular play or two, but he's not a spectacular quarterback. He's just the best f***er who's ever thrown a football. Drew Brees, who retired officially on Sunday. That does sum it up, right? Because a guy that barely reached 6 feet tall, never looked like an all-time great quarterback, but he sure as hell played like one for a long time.
Yeah, it's a great quote. Tom House is a penchant for those kind of quotes. But it really does sum up Breeze. I think Breeze was kind of the Greg Maddux of quarterbacks, right? Hmm. I mean, he's the guy that paints the black, doesn't overpower you with the big arm. He's not Nolan Ryan like, say, Aaron Rodgers or Patrick Mahomes. And I think in this day and age, guys, where you know, everything's social media, viral GIFs of exploits by Patrick Mahomes throwing across his body 50 yards downfield. That's not Breeze. He takes a more sophisticated approach and a nuanced approach to appreciate his greatness. And I've been fortunate because I've been here for his whole career 15 years of covering him and seeing it over and over, you really have to, you really learn to appreciate his brilliance. It's not the physical assets. It's the commitment, the drive, the attention to details, all those intangibles, and then his ability during games to process so quickly and then to make those accurate throws like no one we've ever seen in the game. I mean, he's going to be the all-time most accurate passer, and that's going to be, I think, his greatest legacy.
Mm, I think, you know, you think Saints, you think Peyton and Breeze. I also think Jeff Duncan, because, you know, you've been there the whole time I followed the team. You were there before Drew Brees. You were there for the San Antonio, you know, post Katrina season. And so you sort of saw the impact Brees and Peyton had. The thing I'm curious about, Jeff, from seeing it up close so much, are you surprised it ended up lasting as long as it did without blowing up? Because there were some moments, you know, post Bounty Gate, certainly in the 7-9 series of seasons, there was off field stuff with Peyton. You wondered if he was going to leave. Like, what do you think kept in the end? What ended up, you know, kept them together all that time to the point where they just had, you know, a 4-year run that was actually better than any 4-year run in the regular season than they ever had with Brees?
Well, I think there were a lot of reasons, Greg. You know, and you make a good point. We haven't seen that type of collaboration last as long as this duo did, right? 15 years. Look at Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers. It kind of went south on them in Green Bay. I have a lot of respect for Mike McCarthy. I covered him down here with the Saints. He's a great coach. It just things went south and went stale on him. Same thing happened with Andy Reid in Philadelphia, right? He had to move on, goes to Kansas City, and has this resurrected career. And it never happened in New Orleans. I think because both these guys understood that they weren't going to be the same without each other. I think that both of them are very smart and both of them have great instincts. And I think they understood that each one complemented each other. And I think you also have to give Mickey Loomis a lot of credit, the general manager, because as you mentioned, some things did occur on and off the field that could have led to this breakup of this marriage between quarterback and head coach. And we really haven't seen anything like it in NFL history. What I mean by that is we've never seen a quarterback, an elite quarterback like Brees, paired up with an offensive mind like Sean Payton. If you think about all the great quarterbacks in history, they've never had someone coaching them that also played quarterback like Sean Payton did, and who has that keen understanding of how important that role is, especially in today's game. So I think that also made it a significant collaboration, and both those guys realizing they could not find it anywhere else like they had it here.
In your feature too, which was a great read, you had a quote from James Carville that basically, you know, said that he thought Drew Brees was one of the most important New Orleans citizens in modern history. I mean, there's that whole side of it. You could argue had more of an impact on a city, but quarterback on a city, than Tom Brady in New England, or really anyone. I mean, what happened in the timing of Katrina and all that, he is woven into the fabric of New Orleans forever.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. And you have to be here. And I know Greg lived here for a while. I mean, you have to understand New Orleans is such a idiosyncratic city in America. It's unlike any place in this nation. The European influence here makes it very provincial. It's almost like Odessa Permian of the NFL. You know, it's like a Texas small town football passion, which I didn't know when I moved here. I had no idea the Saints were this passionately followed by the fan base. I mean, people here name their kids after Drew Brees. They name their pets after Drew Brees. You go to a game, all races, creeds, religions, ages, wearing number 9 jerseys. He's easily the most popular person, not just athlete or entertainer, person since I've lived here in 2 decades. I mean, there's no one even close to him. And I think to your point about Carville's comment, which I thought was very astute, you know, this city for centuries has had a reputation of really corrupt political office leadership, a lot of backroom deals here. People don't trust anybody. And so all of a sudden you had this really competent, earnest leader walk into their midst who picked New Orleans right after Hurricane Katrina. He had options. He could have gone to South Beach and quarterback Nick Saban's Dolphins. Instead, he picked New Orleans at a time when no one was coming here. Everybody was leaving town. And I think people immediately gravitated to him. And then they saw the success on the field. Immediate, surprising success, and you know, all those things added up to making him as popular as he was.
Do you get the feeling, Jeff, that there was any waffling on this? Because it was becoming a bit of a running joke on this podcast that when I was checking in, hey, he hasn't retired yet. And there was that report out there that he was, you know, setting records, pushing a sled or whatever. And it was just like, was this a, do you get the vibe this was a difficult decision, or was this a done deal as soon as the playoffs wrapped up this year?
Yeah, it was done. It's been done for weeks. We though, I will say this, everyone in the media was dying, wondering, well, maybe he did have second thoughts, because I was told by a lot of people internally right after the season that there would be an announcement probably after the Super Bowl. And so internally, the Saints were in lockstep with Breeze. But I think as calculating as he is, as considerate as he is, his attention to detail we talked about, I think he wanted to do it on a special day, and picking the 15-year anniversary made a lot of sense to me. It was very much on brand for Drew Brees.
Jeff, you had mentioned the union, right, and how they were better together than apart. Well, here we are. They're going to be apart, and Sean had definitely ingratiated himself to the fan base even more through the way that I think we saw the way things played out with Drew and how loyal he was. So now we're in this Sean-only era of the Saints. How different is that going to be?
Well, I can tell you this. I think Sean Payton, he'll probably never admit this publicly, but he's invigorated by the challenge ahead. As a head coach, I think he's looking forward to trying to rebuild this offense in a different way, around a different quarterback with different skill sets than Drew Brees. And he had a chance to do it on a little bit of a limited basis the last couple of seasons when Teddy Bridgewater filled in and Taysom Hill this past season. But I think trying to rebuild a championship-level team around a different quarterback, I think is stimulating to him intellectually and psychologically. I think he's looking forward to it. And I think the roster here is good enough in a lot of other places defensively, you know, along the offensive line. Obviously, Alvin Kamara, Mike Thomas are all pro-level talents, that this isn't going to be quite like what we saw in New England last year when Tom Brady left. I think the roster in New England's better on both sides of the ball than what Belichick had to work with last season.
Well, Belichick thought he was getting reinvigorated and everything until they went 7-9. He was all excited about it, too. Tell me it's going to be Jameis, though, not Taysom Hill, because I've been kind of dying on Jameis Winston corner here for a while. And, you know, this is, to me, this is going to be his chance. I just heard Kurt Warner on our network say he thought Jameis Winston, when he was in Tampa, and I'm using his words, Kurt Warner, was in the top seven in the NFL. Pick that number out of thin air. In how he could read defense and see the field. And I was like, if that's good enough for Kurt Warner, it's good enough for me. Do you think it's good enough for Sean Payton?
Wait a second. Let me just jump in, Jeff, before you answer here.
Sure.
And I apologize. Greg didn't do his homework. He doesn't know that Taysom Hill just signed a 4-year, $140 million deal. So there's no question who the franchise quarterback is in NOLA.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of funny money in that deal, by the way, guys. Yeah. I don't know if you'll ever see that $140. But look, I think they're going to be a competition in the fall between those two. And I'm assuming Jameis Winston's going to re-sign here in the days ahead, because they've made him a priority. And I know that they've had a lot of communication, so I expect that to happen. But I think it'll be a lot like a deal that Drew Brees signed here in 2006. If you remember, I mean, the narrative's kind of been rewritten now, but it was not a done sure thing when they signed Brees. I mean, they had an out clause after 1 year. That if it wasn't working out, if he wasn't healthy, they could walk away. Drew Brees could walk away. So, you know, it's been rewritten a little bit that there was this love at first sight thing. But they definitely left themselves an option. And I think the Saints will do the same thing with Jameis Winston if it doesn't work out. But I tell you, internally, coaches here, players, teammates, they all love Jameis Winston. I've not heard one negative word about him. But again, I think I heard the same things about Cam Newton and the marriage up in New England, and it was going to be the Patriot way, and it was all going to work out, and it didn't quite work out. So I'm kind of in show-me mode down here.
I have a quick one for you. Drew Brees now becomes an announcer, which is a very chic thing for quarterbacks to do, and you got Tony Romo setting the bar so high. Knowing Drew Brees, do you think, wow, this guy's going to be an awesome color analyst for Notre Dame?
Well, I think he's going to be amazing in describing the game, you know, making it easy to understand for the casual viewer. But I don't think he's ever going to criticize anybody. Brees never says anything bad about anybody. So
not good. That sets the ceiling a little lower, though. That's a problem.
I just know how he's wired. He's too nice a guy. but he will be brilliant at like recollection and recall. You know how like the PGA golfers can remember the club they used and what shot in 1974? That's Breeze. I mean, he's amazing at recalling plays and stuff, and I think that'll really come in handy as an analyst describing plays that maybe he ran that are similar to what he's watching on TV. I can't wait to see how it plays out.
Well, we know you're not going to bury him because he still might, you know, be doing, you know, Breeze book number three or whatever, the next Breeze book.
Stay in the good grace.
Yeah, I'm not going to bury Drew. He's a hard guy to bury. This is the other thing I'll say about him, is a guy that covered him. I mean, 15 years, you all know this. I mean, covering the league, he does a Wednesday press briefing like every quarterback and big star in the league. He never missed one of those in 15 years. I mean, he always showed up for those things and stayed as long as he could. For a superstar, he was as accessible and honest and never really got short with anybody. Just amazing to deal with on a professional level, and I'm going to miss that for sure.
And one last question here, Jeff, and you can follow Jeff on Twitter, at @JeffDuncan_, for all the latest on the Saints and the great writing he does there. Is there any way there's something up Peyton's sleeve here at quarterback? And I know they're eternally trying to get under the cap and they find a way. I'm not saying Russell Wilson necessarily, because that just seems ridiculous. But Winston is a free agent, so there is some flexibility to do something different. Taysom Hill obviously is on the books. Is there anything else, potentially another option line in the weeds here as post-Breeze?
Well, Peyton's always got something up his sleeve, so you can never discount him. And it would not shock me if he fell in love with a quarterback in this draft and they got aggressive and went after one. That would make sense to me more than a trade for Russell Wilson or some big-name quarterback. I just don't think the cap figure is there for the Saints to do that. And I think this is a one-year kind of trial where they're going to have to go cheap, much like the Patriots did last year, just because of the cap implications. But a rookie quarterback would probably still be able to work. And if he finds a guy he likes, and I don't know, I haven't talked to him about it, but they say he liked a Trey Lance, somebody like that he really, really wanted, they would go get him because that's what they do in the draft. And that would not shock me at all.
It'll be interesting to see what happens next. A new era for the Saints. And Jeff, thank you so much. And go get Jeff's book if you want to read about the definitive telling of the tale of Drew Brees and Sean Payton. Thank you very much, Jeff Duncan.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me, man. It was a great time. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thanks, there he goes.
Great Jeff Duncan. That's good. That's a good, you know, you have a guest on for the first time on the show. Sometimes they're good, you know, and sometimes they're all right, you know. You regroup after the show and you say, oh, is that somebody we'd love to have back? Or is that a hit it and quit it, one and done? No, Jeff would love to have Jeff back. You could tell he's just one of those guys that knows exactly what's going on down there, and we could learn from him as well.
So if we have a guest on next time and you don't say anything about him, then the listener
put it
can
together.
Infer that it's possibly a hit it and quit it.
But connect the dots. And, you know, Patrick, you've been on the show multiple times, so you don't need to worry about this. It's clear that we're fans. Multiple. You know? Yeah.
No, it does extend to people sitting in on the show for sure as well. You know, it did get me thinking, and we did the NFL Network show returned last Friday around the NFL, and it will be back on this week as well. So set your DVRs accordingly. We did a This Week in NFL History, and we did just pass the anniversary of Drew Brees signing that initial 6 year. I think it was 6 years, $60 million. But as Jeff points out, there was an out trigger if Brees's surgically repaired shoulder wasn't gonna play. Obviously, it did. I think that is definitively the greatest free agent signing in the history of the sport, right? I mean, you could, I guess, say Reggie White was quote unquote more important because the timing of it and you know, the fight to get to free agency. So there's a different way to look at it. But for what they got in 15 seasons, a Saints franchise that was essentially going nowhere almost their entire history, and what he gave to that organization and also the city, that's got to be the best free agent signing ever, right?
I don't even think it's close, because yeah, White. I think I made one of these lists a few years ago, and I think White was probably probably number two. I mean, and he was awesome, but he wasn't there for 15 years. It wasn't like you were signing him in the start of his prime. The Saints were so mediocre for so long. They weren't bad, like in the Aaron Brooks, Jim Haslett, really like the 90s through early 2000, they were just like mediocre, and he took the, you know, he took them into being one of the, they won more games than anyone except the Patriots since he signed.
I think, right, because it 15 years spans it literally spans generations, right? You have generations of Saints fans that know this entire era as it relates to Drew Brees. And so the city and the perspective there, I'll try to like push back on Tom House, right? Because Tom House is a coach. So it behooves him to have this narrative that like, yeah, if you work hard, you can complete 70% of your passes. No, you can't. Like Drew Brees had significant talent, right? At throwing the football.
He's so accurate. Like yeah. That's the thing. Like
you can't will it to happen.
Yeah. Right. It is a talent. Like Brees, Maddox, like throwing a ball where you want it to go takes a significant amount of talent. And, you know, the Saints and the relationship at the time, right? If you go back then, they might not have known, but like any relationship, it had a great start. It had its ups and downs, and they were able to see it all the way through. And I think like looking back at it, people wonder about these past few years. I think they were important, even though they didn't win that ultimate prize. It kind of went to cement what this team means to people there. And what Sean and Drew honestly mean to each other. And I'm glad that we got to see the way things played out here these past few years.
Yeah, and he endured through the quarterback position changing so much. I mean, it was a huge thing that he was 6 feet tall. And now Russell Wilson and others have come and changed that whole thing too. But, I mean, he got there and they immediately went to the playoffs. And they were a very sort of up and down team. You can go back to the Bobby Hebert squad of the late 80s too. I mean, it wasn't the 1960s and 70s with Archie Manning. But, I mean, he came in at a time when New Orleans went through one of the biggest things any city in our country has gone through in Katrina. And I just, the marriage of all these factors together make it a really special tale. And it's also amazing when you've got Dolphins fans thinking, what if we had evaluated this correctly and found a way to get him in our building? Two franchises would be completely different. We think about them completely differently.
I know we should move on, but it is fascinating. I think Paul Tagliabue really helped save the Saints probably more than anyone. But I do think the success that Brees and Peyton had in 06 was huge. You know, because our listeners probably don't know, like there was literally a report on ESPN that the Saints are moving. Mm-hmm. That was the owner. That was the owner deciding to do that.
Right.
Who's the same ownership now, moving to San Antonio. And the league and different things helped to step in and stop that from happening. But then to come back and to be that good, they went to the NFC Championship in 06, which I know Saints fans just look back at that season as such a magical ride because you did not see it coming, even with Drew Brees. And then to get to the point where I think about these last 4 years, there was like an anonymous Saints player, I forget who, I think it was anonymous, who said, you know, they all thought 2018 was their year. And it is a shame to look back and not have that Saints-Patriots Super Bowl that could have been if not for the bad call. And you can even think about the year before when Drew Brees played unbelievable in that Vikings game that they wound up losing at the buzzer, the Minneapolis Miracle. Drew Brees' comeback in that game was like one of the best games he's ever had. And so it's like a little more luck and Brees could have gotten back and maybe would have gotten another Super Bowl, but wasn't meant to be.
And you're right. Everyone would have loved to see Brady, Brees in the Super Bowl. It does remind me, and it reminds, I think, a lot of people, again, that Brees, he was pretty much shot by the end of this past season at 42 years old. And, hey, listen, that's normal. So yet another all-time great gets taken down eventually by Father Time. He hung in there a little longer than other quarterbacks in the past. But it just, again, points out how insane it is what Tom Brady's doing. And something that Wes brought up often, the quote that was affixed to Peyton Manning and then his importance in Indianapolis, that Peyton Manning changed the skyline in Indianapolis. That's how important a figure he was in that city. Drew Brees saved football in New Orleans. I mean, him being at the front of that team, making them competitive again, and then eventually a champion within 3 years. And then it's good. And Peter King, read his latest column, Football Morning in America, how tirelessly Brees worked behind the scenes during New Orleans recovery post-Katrina. I mean, he walked the walk, and not just talked the talk. So Drew Brees, whatever comes, I don't. Duncan, really, he gave us a good idea that he's probably going to not be that interesting in the booth. And he's so right, because we've talked about it for years in this podcast. Is Drew Brees a little bit of a phony? All these other things are great, obviously, but is he a guy that he's always going to be saying nice things about everyone and you never really learn what he thinks about anything? That might be what he is as an analyst.
You can or because he's so competitive, like he's going to have to realize that part of the job, that you can't be a Pollyanna about every single athlete you speak about. Troy Aikman went through that. He became much more critical down the road on his announcing career and became better.
Whatever you do, like if you're however you go about it, just as long as it's genuine. If he's gassing people up and that's who he is, and he's up there excited about gassing people up, like, oh, this guy could throw the ball through the moon, then like, okay, that's fine. But don't just don't fake it, Drew. Just give us Drew.
You can make up for it. If you're great on X's and O's, you can make up for it. If you actually teach us something, because not enough of the X players do that. I always think you mentioned, like, just last thing, Breeze, like in New Orleans, like how big he is part of the city. I always think of like how his house is, you know, right on St. Charles, you know, kind of the classic, you know, New Orleans uptown street, and right on the trolley tracks. And so it's like everyone knows where Drew Brees lives. And I always thought that was cool. Like every Mardi Gras or anytime the Saints won a big game, like everyone's dousing his house in beads and celebration and all that stuff. It's that, like, he literally was like right there in the city amongst the people.
All right, let's close out the show with a little bit of a 8 o'clock delight. Hit it, Ricky. The Lions re-signed defensive end Romeo Okwara to a 3-year, $39 million contract. He had a big contract year, 10 sacks and 61 pressures. He's staying in Detroit. Hey, they're trying a little bit, Claibon.
Yeah, I'm glad they're keeping somebody. It can't all be fresh and new. Got to keep good players. So, yay, Lions.
Kevin Zeitler, cut by the Giants in a cap move, signs quickly with the Baltimore Ravens, 3-year, $22 million contract. Mark, this guy just loves the AFC North.
He does. He's a really consistent player. He's missed like one game since 2014. And I think the next thing is to see what happens to Orlando Brown Jr., who wants out.
The Houston Texans are making moves in the trade market, but not the one that everybody wants them to do, at least not yet. They trade linebacker Bernardrick McKinney to the Miami Dolphins for Shaq Lawson. Greggy, what do you think about that?
Texans doing some weird moves. I'll just throw in the Marcus Cannon trade that they got from the Patriots, which makes sense too. But then all these like little first day signings of special teamers that, like, it's always like the worst team that does that. You know what I mean?
I feel so bad. After that great podcast interview Trotter and Steve Weiss did with David Culley, I feel even worse about the situation. He seems like such a good dude.
A wonderful guy, yeah. In a tough spot.
Preston Smith restructured his deal to stay with the Packers, and Nate Solder will remain with the Giants after reworking his contract. Anybody?
It's going to make people feel better about Nate Solder, right? He's not making as much money, so maybe Giants fans will cool it.
give the guy a break.
Finally, some cuts. Trey Turner, he is cut loose. Also, Casey Hayward now enters the free agent market.
Well, related to that, we've got a little bit of breaking news here. I mean, I think it's worth it for breaking
news. All
right,
let's hit it.
Let's do it, Ricky. All right, the Chargers have made Corey Linsley the highest paid center in the NFL, and so they use some of that money where they saved by cutting Turner and Hayward, and they give it to Corey Linsley. They also re-signed their cornerback Michael Davis, who's solid. But that's been their problem. They've thrown a lot of money and picks at it over the years, their offensive line.
You will remember the free agency fits piece that I wrote that, as I mentioned, caused sort of an earthquake on NFL.com. I had Linsley to the Chargers, so it's not just hoopla. It was drenched in real substance.
You have the results to back it up.
I also have some breaking news, by the way.
Okay, let's hear it.
Oh, yeah. Former friend of the show and ex-Ram safety John Johnson has signed with the Cleveland Browns. He's now a better friend of the show.
John Johnson, unfortunately, was the guest where we were told we were going to have a different guest, Robert Woods.
Oh, and then John Johnson
came up and sat with us, and Dan was in a tough spot as the host because he knew it wasn't Robert Woods, but no one told us who it was.
I have to tell you.
Tell us who it was.
4 years ago, I wasn't incredibly familiar with what John Johnson looked like. And I was like, who is this? I remember scrambling, asking, who's walking towards us right now?
When did you find out?
It was Johnny Johnson.
as he was sitting down, I think I heard it and I whispered it to Dan basically, and Dan like pivoted very professionally, but it was, there was some crossed wires in terms of us receiving the proper communication.
And one more bit of breaking news, Ricky, hit it.
Wow.
The juice is loose. No, he's not. He's staying in San Francisco. Kyle Juszczyk signs a 5-year extension. He had this to say, looking forward to showing that the juice is always worth the squeeze. That's just in case anybody missed it earlier in the show.
Right.
We don't do that enough. We need to start doing that. Say stuff later, like it's a radio show.
That was good. They brought back Jason Verrett, too, by the way, who was awesome last year.
Hit it, Ricky.
Well, no, we don't necessarily need another breaking news. I just pointing it out. If you're just tuning in, you didn't know that. Verrett, nice player. Brought him back.
All right, good. That was good. Good show. First show from El Segundo here.
Welcome to the South Bay, Dan.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
All three of you guys now.
Yep.
I'm the only
one. Dan and I are probably like 4 minutes away from each other.
And Mark, I'm going to see you in a little bit. And the children, they've been bottled up all day, and they're looking for a release. And now I'm going to send them to you like cannon fodder. They're just going to be firing into your home like a pinball in a pinball machine.
Well, I rattled Simone's cages a little bit and made it very clear to her that she was going to be a large part of this operation, that it was going to require some effort on her part.
What do you think? What do you think the vibe's going to be? Because it's been a little bit, of course, pandemic related. Jack, about 6.5 now. Harrison, 4. And then you have Luke and Colton. What's the vibe going to be, you think?
I think it's going to be adventurous. It's going to be unpredictable. But I know that you say that you're dropping them off after they've been bottled up as sort of a trick on me. But I'm just going to feed them like, big, giant cups of like warm melting chocolate, so that when they are unleashed back on your new house, it's going to be something you've
never
experienced.
You're like an alien that doesn't even know what humans eat and drink, so when you try to describe something, it doesn't sound right.
Well, you're probably right.
They're gonna, if that's true though, they'll come back to Dan just like puking and pooping all over.
What did you have?
It's just gonna be
I drank warm chocolate. What is that? All right, Patrick, you've done it again. And that's why you're a regular part of the program. Not a one-night stand with Patrick Claibon. That's not his style, and that's not our style.
Always there,
committed
when you call,
relationship.
Always on time. That's what I try to do.
We are in a mature, committed relationship. It feels good.
Thanks, guys. I like you too.
Hey, good news for people who like this podcast. We're going to do a show every day this week for pods, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then Friday the network show is back. So we'll be back with you again tomorrow, staying up to date on the new league year, the legal tampering period. That's it for today. And this is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the old boss, Patrick Claibon, and Ricky Hollywood behind the virtual glass. Until Tuesday, heed the call.